Hello, I'm Wendy Barrett Stewart. This is number 0353, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0353. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Chris Pollock, aka Dark Guardian, who roams the streets of New York City to ferret out crime. He's been doing this for over a decade.
It's been over 12 years now. You know, you grow up in certain areas, you see what crime, apathy, and violence can do to a place and do to people, and you want to make a difference. And that kind of didn't click in until I was a little bit older. And one day I just decided, why hasn't anybody gone out and fought crime and helped people like a superhero would? And I got to talking to a couple people, and a bunch of us started going out and doing it.
Kate McCallum and Adam Doolittle have decided to RV full-time after losing their broadcasting jobs.
We were surprised. We were both let go on the same day. Being fired is ugly. It's ugly for the person who's firing you, and it's ugly for the person who's being fired. I would say the first 48 hours, we were in shock, and we didn't really know what we were going to do.
So then months down the line, we were still trying to figure out what to do. And then one night I was just sitting there watching the Blue Jays game and probably on my iPad looking at things, and I kind of got an idea that possibly we could full-time RV.
John Charrington, author of Walking Through Camelot, shares the story of walking across Britain.
There's some 140,000 miles of walking over largely private land in a country that's no larger than Oregon. When you stop to think about that, it is truly amazing. You can literally walk in any direction you want and crisscross the country just on private footpaths. Often you're walking by somebody's living room on a country estate, even slicing through a part of Prince Charles Highgrove Estate. It's truly amazing.
And we have lots and lots and lots of Stuff File news and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0353 was Wendy Barrett Stewart. She is a cat rescuer at Cats Manger Rescue, and you can find the link to their Facebook page on the What's On page on my website, which she just mentioned for this show, which is 0353. See how it all comes back full circle? Yes. Yes, indeed. Wendy is also a Dawson College grad who went to Vijay campus back in the day when I did. She always, always had a smile on her face that just simply lit up the room. Thank you very much, Wendy, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program that also is heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? There are two things that often come up in the Stuff File news. Stories that deal with people giving rather compelling explanations to their plight, and also frivolous lawsuits. Now, this story has the pleasure of combining the two. Peter Jensen of Athol, Idaho, filed a lawsuit against the State Transportation Department in April after his driving privileges were revoked because his car had no license plate. For the inconvenience, he believes he deserves $5.6 million in damages. By the way, gold and silver only, please. Because, for example, there is nothing about license plates in the Ten Commandments. Has anybody explained to him that there's also nothing about cars in the Ten Commandments? Yeah. And we have a couple more stories that include compelling explanations and also highlight people with issues. Number one, 27-year-old Sophia Sanchez was charged with intentionally crashing her car into her boyfriend's vehicle in April in Riverside, Illinois. According to police, the couple had been arguing the night before, and Sanchez said she felt that she had to disable his car so that he would talk to her. Oh, I'm sure he'll talk to her. She's just not going to like what he has to say. And number two, 25-year-old William Timothy Thomas was arrested for vandalizing a home in Largo, Florida in April. He told police he needed to go destroy stuff because, quote, he listened to too much music and masturbated too much. What I want to know is, was he doing those two things at the same time? Because perhaps he doesn't fully understand the meaning of the term rhythm method. Yeah. Motorist Rebecca Musara was stopped for speeding in October 2015 by state troopers in New Jersey and dutifully handed over her license, insurance, and registration, but declined to answer the troopers' "Do you know why we stopped you?" questions. Annoyed at her silence, troopers Matthew Stazone and Dimitri Gossa threatened several times with increasing aggressiveness, according to dashboard video obtained by New Jersey Advanced Media, and then they arrested Musara for obstruction. Musara pointed out that, as nearly every American knows, she has the right to remain silent. The troopers nonetheless arrested her, then recited, of course, her right to remain silent. After nearly 2 hours back at the station, a supervisor offered a weak apology and released her. Musara, an attorney, unsurprisingly, has filed a federal lawsuit. Bet you'll be singing like a canary in court. Oh, yeah. And what is it about climbing down a chimney that makes crazy people want to take their clothes off? Carrie Sapp said she was working the next morning at the Carroll Redemption Center in Carroll, Iowa, when she heard a man yell for help from the chimney. Now, she said the man tried to explain, "I was playing hide-and-seek with my cousin. Don't call the cops." But the police were called, as were the fire department, which eventually managed to free the suit-covered naked man. Firefighters initially planned to use a rope to pull Jordan Kajulski from the chimney, but eventually opted to hammer a hole into it and pull him out. Though naked, the 29-year-old Jordan had his clothes with him. "This is definitely a first for the Carroll Fire Department," said Fire Chief Greg Schreck. Now, Jordan was charged with trespassing. Yeah. How many 29-year-olds are still playing hide-and-seek? And for that matter, how many are doing it naked? Inquiring minds want to know. Anyway, let's get to our last story in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest, shall we? Police in Edmonton, Alberta were called at 7 p.m. to check a man who had climbed a 25-story construction crane and was sitting on top drinking a beer. The man came down at police bidding and explained he was just up there. He wanted to get a selfie at sunset. Unamused officers said the man, who is from B.C., faces a ticket for drinking in public, trespassing, and mischief. The unnamed man showed the resulting photo to police, who noted that it was blurry. Yes, well, so was he. Yet another idiotic story of what people will do to get a selfie. Sadly, we'll be hearing a lot more of these stories in the near future. That's just the sad reality of life these days, isn't it? Yes. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on this edition of the Stuff File program, shall we? A real-life superhero is patrolling the streets of New York City, and now he's looking for other costume crusaders to join his real-life Justice League. Chris Pollack, a.k.a. Dark Guardian, is the founder of the New York Ronin. It's a superhero academy that began with a successful GoFundMe campaign back in 2013. To tell us about his recruitment plans and why he does what he does, Chris joins us on the line right now from New York. Hi, Chris.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Thanks for being on the program with us. You're getting a lot of news coverage these days with the work you're doing as a real-life superhero of sorts. Tell us how this got started and why you do it.
Well, I've been doing this for, it's been over 12 years now. And just, you know, you grow up in certain areas, you see what crime, apathy, and violence can do to a place and do to people, and you want to make a difference. And that kind of didn't click in till I was a little bit older. And one day I just decided, why hasn't anybody gone out and fought crime and helped people like a superhero would? And I got to talking to a couple people, and a bunch of us started going out and doing it.
Okay, so you've been doing this for a while, as you say. Now you've had this GoFundMe campaign, and you've also now trying to recruit other people. First of all, what does law enforcement say about what you do?
They, you know what, I'm following the law. So I don't have anything, you know, too bad to say about it. I've been down to the precinct when I was dealing with the big gangs of drug dealers. They, of course, didn't want to see me or anybody else get hurt. But, you know, they appreciate when I go out and do the wanted flyers. They do appreciate that we're out being an extra set of ears and eyes. But they just let me do my thing.
Okay. So now that you're recruiting, what exactly are you looking for in recruits?
Well, I'm looking for somebody, of course, who first is going to be, you know, be able to defend themselves, handle themselves on the streets. But you got to be street smart. You got to know how to deal with people and handle people. We're not going out trying to beat up people. We're out there to try to protect people and keep communities safer.
You have been doing this for quite a while, and the cops now know you, so they know your level of enthusiasm for the task at hand. But now you're recruiting. Are you concerned at all about the recruits you get? Like, how do you weed out somebody who might want to be doing this for the wrong reasons?
Well, I think it takes a little time getting to know them. You meet up with them. You get to know them. You spend a little time. You know, you take them out in a group where it's a very controlled setting and atmosphere. And, you know, you kind of just give it time. You deal with people. We're going to take them through some training, exactly how we do things. And that's pretty much it.
Now, you yourself are a martial arts instructor, correct?
Yes.
And have you been in any situations in the dozen years now that you've been doing this where you've come into danger yourself?
Yeah, danger. Danger is a regular part of what I do. Now, typically, you know, it's usually quiet nights, but it does get dangerous. I've had, you know, people threatening to kill me. I've had people flash a gun at us. I've had people held a broken up bottle to me. So, yeah, definitely get dangerous. People get in your face. You get in the middle of fights. It's a pretty regular thing.
What does your family say about this, Dee?
Well, you know, I've been doing this so long, it's at a point where they're like, that's just Chris. That's what he does. So it's kind of an accepted thing.
Have you ever thought of going into law enforcement yourself, of being an actual police officer as opposed to being, I guess, a superhero, or what some people might actually call a vigilante, although a vigilante is different. A vigilante, you know, seeks vengeance. You're not doing that, right?
That's correct. You know, I'm not a vigilante. I don't break the laws. I follow and work within the community. But, you know, we're just out there to help.
Okay, so have you ever thought of going into law enforcement yourself?
Well, I've actually have. You know, I do respect the job that they do. I think a lot of the times they do a lot of great work. But it kind of just wasn't for me. I almost followed through with the process many years ago. But I like doing my own thing. I like doing it without pay, without having somebody telling me, no, you need to be doing this. I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart and giving my free time and putting myself on the line because it's my passion.
Okay, you're known as the Dark Guardian. How did that come about?
Pretty simple kind of, you know, name. I'm typically out at the dark of night, and I feel it's my duty and obligation to help guard and protect my community.
Are you wearing any kind of costume?
We do. I have my red bulletproof vest I wear. I have my black and red pants. And, you know, that's pretty much it. You know, it definitely stands out, but it's nothing too crazy.
And what do people say to you when you're walking down the street? I'm talking on both sides of the spectrum. I mean, I'm sure there are some people out there who really appreciate what you do and know you on the street. And there are some nefarious characters who might want to do harm to others. What is the kind of feedback you're getting from the general population to what you do?
Well, I think it's typically positive. You know, this is New York City, so people kind of don't bat an eye when somebody's dressed a little different or outlandish or anything like that. But typically people are really positive. I get out in the communities, deal with people all the time. People just like, oh, that's just some guy walking around. That's fine. Or, you know, some people know me. Some people are like, oh, superhero guy. You know, it's been pretty positive.
Are you ever worried about trouble you might get into? I mean, especially now, you are doing all this media. Your face is in the paper. You're on television. You're doing interviews all over the place. Unfortunately, sad to say, there are people out there who will seek out notoriety by doing things to famous people, especially in a situation where you're out there looking for criminals in a way.
Well, really, the way I view that is if somebody is crazy enough, sick enough, or evil enough to do something like that, I'd rather them come after me than anybody else.
Okay. So what is the recruitment like going through? Have you picked up some people already to add to your group?
Yeah, we got a couple people who's expressed good interest and seem like really good candidates, so I'm going to be meeting up with them more. I got a whole bunch of people who are still contacting me because they're interested, so I got a lot of running around and a lot of people to meet.
And how many nights a week do you go out?
Right now, it's typically twice a week.
Do you hope to increase that time period that you're going out, or is that one of the reasons you want a team out there?
Yeah, one of the reasons I want a team out there is that we can get more patrols going, more activities going on a regular basis. It doesn't have to be just me running around doing it all the time. I work two jobs. I live a pretty busy life, and my free time is spent doing this.
Of course, somebody who does what you do is not anything new in New York City. I think back to the days of Curtis when he was doing his thing several years ago. Did you get these ideas from groups that were around before?
Well, yeah, I've seen it happen, and I got a lot of great respect for Curtis Sliwa and the Guardian Angels and the great work they've done. It's kind of, you know, along the same vein, just a little twist and a little different.
Do you wish, seriously, that more people, and I know you're recruiting, but just generally speaking, more people would get involved with helping the police and pointing out where criminals are and being more present on the streets, just generally as part of being a community, part of being a neighborhood?
Yeah, I think 100% people need to get more involved. We got this not snitching culture. People don't want to talk to the police, deal with the police. And I get that in certain ways, but without the police, you know, we're just adding to the problem. You know, we're giving these criminals, these people up to no good, more power to do whatever they want to do. We need to get involved. We need to step up. We need to say something and do something. And if we want our communities to be better and safer, we all need to take care of our own neighborhoods.
Generally speaking, do you think that life in major cities, especially in New York, is worse than it was before, or is it just about the same, or is it better but we are talking about it more because we have a greater sense of media coverage?
I feel like we've kind of slightly had an uptick in crime. I think there's a lot of stuff being unreported. I think there's kind of like a little feeling of unease. I think they've done an amazing job over the past, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. But I feel like we're kind of taking a little step back.
People can find out more information by going to your Facebook page. There's a Facebook page called Dark Guardian SH, correct?
Yeah, they can find. Yeah, that's my Twitter handle. You just search me online on Google, on Facebook, Dark Guardian, you'll find me.
And when they go to the Dark Guardian page on Facebook, what will they find?
I post everything I'm doing. So I'm going out on patrol. I'll let you know. You know, you'll get some pictures. You'll get some feedback from me. So you'll get everything I'm up to.
Excellent. Chris, thank you very much for being on the program with us. Continued success on what you do. And for heaven's sake, be safe out there.
Thank you.
Chris Pollack, a.k.a. Dark Guardian. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0353, and you'll find links to Chris's Facebook page.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Sit back, relax, let it rattle around between your ears, tickling your cerebellum, and enjoy.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to former broadcasters who have decided to become full-time RVers, and we'll meet the author of Walking Through Camelot, and he talks about his journey literally walking across Britain. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day and more Stuff File news coming up right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, it's easy to lose track of time if you're not on a schedule. Say, for instance, you stop for some gas. You know, you fill up. Maybe you buy a few instant lottery tickets and scratch them. You nurse your blueberry slushy and make a couple of phone calls. You know, just pass the time. But not everybody shares your laissez-faire attitude towards time. An employee at one California gas station got more than a little fed up with one such customer. Police launched an investigation after a video has emerged showing the gas station employee using a bat to vandalize a truck because the driver stayed too long at the pump. The video that was taken on a cell phone shows the female employee at a Valero gas station counting down before hitting the truck numerous times. The owner of the truck, who identified himself as Ray, said he was shocked by the attack and feared for his safety. Police officers who responded to the scene arrested the woman on a charge of vandalism. She was booked into jail and her bail was set at $20,000. Ray admitted that he was sitting in his truck making phone calls while he was filling up his tank with gas. He said that he had lost track of time, possibly staying there for about an hour, an entire hour, before the employee launched the attack. Okay, first of all, you're not supposed to be using your cell phone at a pump. That's dangerous. And second, on the part of the gas station employee, perhaps a friendly knock on the window before you decide to haul out your trusty Louisville slugger. Just a thought, okay? And according to court records, a 16-year-old boy in Lakewood, Washington, set up a deal over Facebook to buy marijuana. A friend met the dealer, who showed the goods, which the friend grabbed and ran. The dealer and his accomplice chased the friend before the boy, who allegedly set up the deal, showed up wearing a mask and wielding a handgun. He asked, "What's up?" The dealers ran toward their car, but then the teen put the gun back in his pants and it went off, shooting him in the groin. The unnamed boy needed 7 hours of surgery to repair a fractured pelvis, fractured femur, and severely damaged femoral artery, and he was then arrested on suspicion of first-degree robbery with a firearm and unlawful possession of a firearm. His friend was also arrested. Well, that story just kind of worked out the way it should have, didn't it? Chalk one up to karma. 45-year-old John Bowman of Arvada, Colorado, admits he made a pipe bomb and blew up a curbside mailbox. He wasn't trying to hurt anyone or invoke anarchy. Rather, he says he wanted to impress his girlfriend. She wanted to hear a loud boom, he told investigators.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
Yes, he faces federal charges of attempting to maliciously damage or destroy property used in interstate commerce and faces up to 20 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Again, I have to state he's 45 years old. He could spend 20 years in prison just because his girlfriend wanted to hear a loud boom.
Where's the kaboom? There was supposed to be an earth-shattering kaboom.
Seriously, grow up. Okay, one has to wonder what is going on or not going on with the educational system in Texas, because we have three items here that, when put together, tell a kind of disturbing story. Number one, a Houston television station revealed in May that a French teacher at a Houston School District Energy Institute High School doesn't speak French, but did take 1 year of it in high school herself. Yeah. Number two, the Sheldon School District near Houston admitted in May that a 7-year-old girl at Sheldon Elementary had written her own successful "Please Excuse Rosabella" early note using lettering typical of a 7-year-old, and was allowed to go home instead of attending her after-school program. And number three, school officials at Krista McAuliffe Middle School in Houston threatened to arrest a 13-year-old girl during the last school year because they were unaware that the girl's $2 bill for her cafeteria payment was valid U.S. currency. Yeah. Clearly, something has to be done about the educational standards of the Lone Star State. And finally, in this section of Stuff All News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, still with education, by the way, or lack thereof, 36-year-old Timothy Trammell was arrested on several charges in Jonesville, South Carolina in May after a sheriff's deputy spotted him spray painting a car that was not his. According to the deputy's report, Trammell had just finished angrily painting "cheater" on the car belonging to a woman identified as his girlfriend. Cheater spelled C-H-E-E-T-E-R. That's C-H-E-E-T-E-R. Does anybody really have to add any commentary to that story? Me doth think not. Yeah. Let's just get to our next guest, shall we? Kate McCallum and Adam Doolittle are former broadcasters who, like many in the business, recently got pink-slipped by the radio station they worked at. But their employment misfortune has led them down a new road, literally. They have a website called fulltimecanada.ca with a subtitle that says Working, Playing, and Full-Time RVing Across Canada. Kate and Adam join us on the line via Skype from Prince Edward Island. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Thanks for being on the program with us. So you lost your jobs at a radio station, and you'd been doing it for quite a while. It's not like you were in there for a week or so, right?
Yeah, I had a 20-year career, and Adam was working, well, for a little over a decade.
Wow. So this came to an end, and I've been in that situation. I come from a radio background, and you know, it's your life and career, and suddenly it's taken away from you. What was your first thought when the radio world left you behind, so to speak? And how did you get over to the world of RVing?
Well, first of all, I would say our first thought when we were let go is we were surprised, but we weren't surprised because of the way that the broadcasting industry in Canada has been downsizing, you know, with all the different companies. So we were surprised, though, that we were both let go on the same day. Being fired is ugly. It's ugly for the person who's firing you, and it's ugly for the person who's being fired. The first 48 hours, we were just kind of, we were in shock, and we didn't really know what we were going to do. But luckily, you know, we were given a generous severance package, and so it allowed us a couple of weeks to just kind of sit there and breathe a little bit and try and figure it out what we wanted to do.
Yeah, so then months down the line, we were still trying to figure out what to do, and different thoughts and ideas were coming to mind, most of them that weren't all that feasible. And then one night I was just sitting there watching the Blue Jays game and, you know, probably on my iPad looking at things. And I kind of got an idea that possibly we could full-time RV. One of the things that we've loved to do for, you know, in the 8 years that we've been together is travel together. Mm-hmm. But we both have not been west of Ontario. We've done all the Maritimes, but we haven't been west of Ontario. So I thought, what if we get out of our house, downsize our possessions, and then we basically buy an RV, and then we will travel Canada and get to explore Canada province by province and really enjoy parts of the country that we haven't been to yet, or even some of the parts that we have been to, like Prince Edward Island. So one night, after some research, I kind of thought, okay, I'm going to propose this to Kate. So on the way home from a job that we were working together, I said, I think I have an idea. This might work for us, although I'm still kind of skeptical, and I think you might say no. So I pitched it to her, and there was a little bit of silence, and I imagined that the answer was probably going to be no, because I've had plenty of crazy ideas over the year, that, you know, sound good at first, but just don't really ever come to fruition for whatever reason. But I said it to her, and then, you know, after a little bit of thinking, she said, yeah, I love it. And I was kind of shocked and floored, like, uh-oh, she actually said yes. Now we got to actually kind of sit down and really, really discuss this. And we discussed it, looked into it, and to see how feasible it would be and whatnot. And then it was kind of born in November, and then, you know, we had the winter to prepare for it, downsize our possessions and whatnot, and buy our RV, which we did in February. And then just over a week and a half ago, we moved into our RV here in Borden Carlton, PEI.
Okay, now, first of all, where is home for you guys originally?
Originally for me is Langton, Ontario, which is about 45 minutes from Brantford.
Okay.
And for me, Bradford, Ontario, about 40 minutes north of Toronto.
And where was the radio station that you were let go from?
That was in New Brunswick.
That was in New Brunswick. Okay. Yeah. I first came across your story because, first of all, Kate, you wrote an excellent piece entitled Dear Radio, Saying Goodbye to My 20-Year Career. And Adam, wrote a great piece called Why We Decided to Full-Time RV. And people can find those at fulltimecanada.ca. So when you embarked on this idea of doing this, it was obviously, Adam, you had to convince Kate, but obviously not too much. But what did your friends and family say about this once you expressed to them what you guys were going to do?
My family was you know, incredibly supportive. My mom has always been a traveler. She's always, you know, she's been all over the place. And you know, my family and friends were all like, this is really cool.
Yeah, then for my family, I decided that it would be best if we had more of the details really set in stone before I told them. Like, I know with Kate, she told her family before we even had an RV purchase. For me, I wanted to make sure we had the RV purchased, a campground picked, pretty much every detail ironed out, because I knew they would have a tremendous amount of questions. So we actually, when that finally came, we were actually all down in Florida together on a vacation, and we were just driving around Orlando, and that's when I decided that it would be a good time to tell my parents. They were, I don't want to say they're shocked, I guess they were interested about, again, having so many questions, because they didn't know how logical it would be and the logistics of it as well. And then, of course, there was a whole part of telling them that we downsized and got rid of a bunch of most of our possessions. But overall, family and friends have been really, really supportive, kind of envious in a way. A lot of them say we're jealous. We wish we could do something like that. And, you know, that's kind of one of the things we want to do with the site as well, is kind of show people that there is an alternative way of life out there, that you don't have to, you know, live the 9-to-5, live in a stick and brick kind of house. You can do something different. I mean, we're still obviously fresh at this, but it's something we hope to succeed at and show other people across the country that you can do this as well.
Well, Kate, even though you wrote, again, that great piece, being in broadcasting for such a long period of time, trust me, it never really leaves you. So I have to ask, are you guys going to do a podcast or do videos or do online media to add to what you're doing with fulltimecanada.ca?
We've talked about that. We've talked about, you know, doing the podcast, and we do have a YouTube page as well. I mean, we haven't had time to do the video yet, but we're going to do that this weekend. And I think that what we've done is, you know, working in broadcasting has taught both of us a tremendous amount that's allowed us to be very versatile in any jobs that we do. You know, right now I'm working as a server, as a waitress, and, you know, I have missed that engagement with people that you get from listeners, and I'm finding that now I'm kind of transitioning those skills to be a better server. And I know that sounds crazy, but it works, and then I actually get money for it, so okay.
And I guess, because one of the things is when you're in this business, one of the things that draws out of you is your sense of curiosity. And now the both of you have an opportunity to go across the country and talk to individuals and meet real people and feed that curiosity.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the one cool thing about, you know, staying in a campground is that you have a constantly changing sense of community. I mean, there's people that stay in the parks throughout the season, but then there's people that come and go every weekend. So, I mean, we're going to be able to meet all sorts of different like-minded people, which is great, you know, that do the same kind of thing, whether it is just seasonal or, you know, maybe just throughout the couple weekends of the summer or whatever. But it'll be nice to kind of get that interesting sense of community.
Full-time RVing is something more palatable in the United States because up here our climate just doesn't allow it for part of the year. Will you be dipping into the United States as well?
We'd like to eventually, but one of the things that's happening in Canada right now is that because of the dollar, a lot of snowbirds are staying in Vancouver Island. So when we first looked into this, we thought, you know, where are we going to stay in the winter? And Vancouver Island is the place to go. It rarely drops below zero. So, you know, an RV can handle that. There's some things that you have to do to winterize your RV. But for the most part, you know, the campgrounds there are open year-round. So that's where we plan on spending our winters. And we plan on becoming residents of British Columbia as well.
It sounds like you've done your homework and your pros already, but are there things that you're learning right now that are catching you off guard and surprising you as you embark on this?
Absolutely. I mean, for both of us, I mean, Kate previously had a trailer quite a few years ago, but I've never RV'd in my life. So, I mean, it's something that's really, really new to both of us. We're learning a lot about our RV. We blew a fuse the other day and had to figure out how to get that going again. We had to drain our tanks today for the first time as well, which was fun and a little bit stinky, but it is a learning process. But I mean, it's, you know, with the internet and I mean, with everybody in the campgrounds as well, you know, we're thankful for their help in showing us different things that we don't yet know, but we're quickly picking it up.
We have actually, we're work camping here at Jellystone Park in Prince Edward Island, and our managers, Jason and Rachel, they have full-time RV'd. She's American, and he's from Prince Edward Island. They full-time RV'd with their children for several years, so they've been absolutely instrumental in helping us and teaching us about all the different things that go along with it.
Well, speaking as someone who is an inner city kid, needs concrete and to be cable ready, I wish you all the luck and success in the world. It's a fascinating story. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is fulltimecanada.ca. And I guess they can follow you on Twitter as well, correct?
Yes, we're on Twitter and Facebook and even Pinterest. So, you know, if you're into that, great.
Instagram, Google+. Yeah.
Excellent. Kate and Adam, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
Kate McCallum and Adam Doolittle. You can check out their website at fulltimecanada.ca. You can also follow them on Twitter at fulltimecanada. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0353, and you'll find links to their site. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Before you use a business for the first time, do you ever check an independent website to see what their customers have said about them? Millions of people use websites like TripAdvisor and Yelp to get reviews of restaurants, hotels, and other businesses. Sites like these rely on freedom of speech laws to make sure that both good and bad reviews are provided, as well as defamation laws that protect businesses from false accusations. However, a relatively new legal tactic called a non-disparagement clause is being used by some businesses to stifle bad reviews on these sites, even if they're fair. For example, a pet sitting service in Texas that uses this clause in its contract is suing one of its customers for at least $200,000 after she posted a bad review online. Let's be fair, websites that give us honest customer reviews could disappear if lawsuits like this are successful. That's why some states are considering laws that would prohibit so-called non-disparagement clauses in contracts. California has already enacted this protection. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
Hi, this is Wynonna Judd, and you probably don't think of me as a person with an eating disorder, but here's my truth. Eating disorders are real, and they are not just about losing weight. Eating disorders are the way you feel about your body and the way you treat yourself. For years, I have been a compulsive overeater, and it wasn't until its effects threatened my health, my family, and my career that I finally reached out for help. Recovering from an eating disorder is possible, and I'm living proof. But you have to take the first step, so I urge you to visit nationaleatingdisorders.org.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about walking across England. Plus, we do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments. I got a couple more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But first, I just want to mention very quickly that we love to hear from you at the Stuff File program. Just send me an email with your thoughts or questions about the show, and we'll respond. Just email me at peter@thestufffile.com. That's peter@thestufffile.com. Now, some of the questions might even make it onto our program in our mailbag section, so stay tuned for that. Also, Facebook users, we urge you to join the Stuff File fan page. It's easy to find. It's at facebook.com/thestufffileprogram. We'd love to have you as part of the fun. The more, the merrier. And yes, as I said earlier, and as I often say, just a reminder, this show is also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, getting back to the stuff. In April, police in Brighton, Ontario responded to what was reported by neighbors as a domestic dispute involving shrieks like, "I hope you die." They found only a man arguing with his pet parrot, who the man said was beaking off at him. Never heard that as a verb before, but anyway, there you go. No arrests were made. Well, that's what happens when you deal with a couple of bird brains. And finally, a woman attended the funeral of her grandmother in Clark County, Ohio. 19-year-old Blake Elliott was supposed to be a pallbearer at that funeral, but he never showed up. It wasn't reported as to how he was related to the woman. When the granddaughter got home, she found out what Elliot was doing instead. In the 2 hours she was gone, he had allegedly broken into her house and stolen TVs, video game systems, and other electronics. Elliot's vehicle was caught on camera in the victim's driveway. Some of the stolen goods was found at his apartment. He is facing burglary charges. You know, he was supposed to be a pallbearer. Instead, he chose to simply be appalling. There's a special place in hell for people like this. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program, shall we? Have you ever had the idea to take a walk through history? John Charrington has. He is the author of the book Walking Through Camelot, which chronicles his journey walking a footpath across England. He joins us on the line right now from British Columbia. Hi, John.
Hi, Peter.
So is this something you always wanted to do?
Well, it is. I always loved history as a youth, and I had visited England and other parts of Europe over my youth and early 20s. But what I knew was unique about England is that it was about the only country in the world where there were so many footpaths over not only public but private land, which is foreign to North America, where we abolished the rights to walk over private land in the early part of the 20th century.
Now, that's interesting, because I don't think a lot of people are aware of that fact, that you can take these walks over private lands.
That's right, and that's what makes it unique. There's some 140,000 miles of walking over largely private land in a country that's no larger than Oregon. And that when you stop to think about that, it is truly amazing. You can literally walk in any direction you want and crisscross the country just on private footpaths. And often you're walking by somebody's living room on a country estate, even slicing through a part of Prince Charles Highgrove Estate. It's truly amazing.
Wow. Now, it's called the Macmillan Way, correct?
Yes, this particular long-distance path is called Macmillan Way.
And it's 300 miles?
Yes, and it runs from Boston up in Lincolnshire, which is on the Wash, part of the North Sea, and it goes in a steady southwesterly direction right down through the Cotswolds, through Dorset, and then comes out at the English Channel at a place called Abbotsbury on Chesil Beach.
Before you embarked on this journey, was it an idea of yours to do a book? Or was it just a personal goal of yours to walk this path?
It was more of a personal goal. My mother had passed away recently, and I had a walking companion, Carl Eisenman, who was in his mid-70s, but a real bull of the woods, and he was raring to go, so he saw it as a physical challenge, and I also wanted to see the history unfolding before my eyes, because you can't travel more than a mile on these footpaths without encountering history.
Wow. So how long of a journey was it for you when you took this 300-mile trek? And also, what time of year did you go in?
Well, it took us about 3.5 weeks, and I went in the month of May, and we had great weather, and you know, there's nothing like springtime in England. Spring is great everywhere, of course, but there's something about walking down an English country lane with hedgerows and full of birds and flowers and roses and so on, and then you go around a corner and there's a castle staring at you. It's magical. It's like going down the rabbit hole in Alice in Wonderland, or through C.S. Lewis's wardrobe door in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. It's like going into another dimension, literally. You are lost to the world all of a sudden.
How busy or popular are these trails? Did you see a lot of foot traffic? Were there a lot of people when you made this journey?
Amazingly not, because when you've got 140,000 miles of footpaths, even though there's you know, hundreds of thousands of walkers in theory, you don't really see very many on the trail, except when you get to the more populated villages and towns, and even then it's just on weekends that they might be out on a stroll. The Brits, when they do their hardcore walking, they tend to go to the Lake District if they stay in Britain, or they might do the Pennine Way or around the coast of Cornwall or Dorset, but more likely they go on a vacation to Spain and go to a hot spot, just like many North Americans do. But you can travel for miles without seeing a soul on these footpaths.
So at what point during the journey, or maybe even after the journey, did you say to yourself, you know, I have a book here?
Well, I knew I did after I'd completed the journey, but I had a busy law practice, and what really motivated me in the end to write it many years later was realizing that the character of my walking mate, Carl, was so interesting that if I managed to incorporate the observations that he made and the banter between us along the way, that would enrich the book. So that it wasn't just a travel guide and really was more of a walking experience for the reader.
Was that something that made the trip the most worthwhile for you, the fact that you had Carl with you? Did you see things literally through different eyes than had you gone either with someone else or by yourself?
Absolutely, Peter. Carl is the uncle of Steve Eisenman, the hockey player, and he walks much as in the same way that Steve used to play hockey. He's aggressive. He sees the ice, sees the landscape, but he's intrepid. He boldly marches ahead and regards it as a real physical endurance test. I'm more laid back and cultural and wanting to take photographs and explore all the different historical nuances. Now, having said that, Carl was also interested in the history too, but his character is somewhat different than mine, but that meant that we got to see the history and the trails from a completely different perspective and then could compare notes over dinner.
What were some of the wow factors of taking this trip? What were some of the things that either took your breath away or that you really stopped to contemplate or just landmarks along the way that left an indelible mark on you?
Oh, there were so many. Gazing over a bridge into the little stream where King John lost the crown jewels and they're still searching for them. Coming to a castle that had a real creepy feeling because it was in ruins and there's all kinds of morbid history associated with it. Coming being chased by a bull in the field, and coming across a crime scene along the way where it looked like someone had been raped and maybe worse, and having to report it to the police. But overall, a more positive experience coming to Cadbury Camelot, seeing where John Steinbeck lived for 9 months as he tried to write his massive poem on the history of King Arthur, and then climbing up Cadbury Camelot, the ramparts of the hill fort, and gazing over the countryside and realizing that this exalted spot was likely where a British chieftain, whether he was Arthur or just someone else, had made the last stand against the invading Anglo-Saxons coming up from the coast. And then the places that Thomas Hardy haunted in Dorset, coming out on Chesil Beach and seeing the fog lift and the British destroyer slowly knifing its way through the channel. There's just so many invariable experiences we had that it takes the breath away.
I would assume that with so many miles of walking paths and some of it going through public private property, that there may be one or two people who might not be amused with the idea that they're part of a public pathway. However, I'm sure there are some people who are probably enriched by that idea and love telling stories of their neck of the woods when people walk by. Did you get to interact with the locals and hear some interesting stories that way?
Yes, we did, Peter, and you're right. I think a significant portion of the landowners who are farmers either tolerate or actually like having the idea of a walking path through their property. A few of them, of course, don't. Yes, you'd sit down with often the farmer at a B&B at night that was right on the path, and you'd get stories about, something that happened. For example, one time we were told by this old codger that if we walked down the path a little ways and looked at this brick wall, that on the fourth brick down from the top, we would find a little X scratched, and that marked in memory a woman who had been murdered back in 1892 on this stretch of the trail, and they never knew her name, but this was the commemoration of her death, just this little scratched X. And sure enough, when we walked on the trail the next day, we found this X scratched in the wall, in the brick wall. So everywhere you go, you're told stories not only of interesting village incidents and rural incidents, but also history, like there's World War II bunkers that are still standing from up and down the valleys of these rivers where they were getting ready to fight the Nazis if they invaded the island. And so everything from more modern stuff like World War II, going all the way back to Queen Boadicea, the Celtic queen who fought off the Romans, and you're standing on the spot, well, this is where she fought the Romans and defeated them, at this ford. And, you're standing there and you can't believe this. You're standing at a point of living history. It's amazing.
Sounds absolutely fascinating. The book is called Walking Through Camelot. John, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to share your experience with us.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Peter.
John Charrington, author of Walking Through Camelot. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0353, and you'll find links to Amazon.com and Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for The Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for The Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents The Idiot of the Day.
The Daily Pakistan newspaper, covering the anti-terrorism court in Karachi in April, reported that a judge in courtroom 3 asked a constable if he knew how the grenade entered into evidence worked. Rather than assume that an explanation was requested, the constable pulled a pin to demonstrate, and the resulting explosion injured the constable, a court clerk, and another police officer. The constable is said to be facing severe discipline as soon as he recovers. I believe what the judge was after here was ask and answer, not show and tell, because why, oh why, would someone, when asked how a grenade worked, would pull the pin in open court? One reason, and one reason only, they're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0353. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0353. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Experienced another edition of the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Now, doesn't that make you feel all warm and fuzzy? Like watching puppies and kittens frolicking in a field of daisies. Like the smells coming from Grandma's kitchen. Like the hallucinogenics you took in the 60s and I'm taking right now. Hello, cartoon birdies. Perhaps I've said too much. Anyway, you know what I mean. Let the glow wash over you and enjoy. Peace out.